Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 7, delivered on February 3, 2016. The title of this lecture is Present Value and Future Value.
Today, present value and future value. Start with a question. This goes back to the valuation principle and the law of one price. Just as a quick stab. You, sir, are a flower arrangements guy. You make flower arrangements. Now, on a given day, you could take some of your flowers home, or you can sell your flowers. You could take the whole batch home. Now, if you sell them, they're worth $500. Truth of the matter is, you hate flowers. You really don't like them, but it's a job. And it does connect you with people on a very deep level because they love flowers, so they love you. Okay, so now, given that you hate flowers, and you can, but you could sell them for $500, if you love flowers, would the value of them be more than $500, or would it still be $500? Exactly. It doesn't matter whether you like or dislike, all that matters is the market price. That is the value. Any value you would put inside of yourself, oh, I dearly love these, is irrelevant to the market price, to the value. You always keep that in mind that I had this interview for about a year ago or something like that for a write-up in ISU Stories about my artwork. And the young woman asked me, she said, well, you have such a passion, and that's why you do this, and that's what makes it so valuable to you. And I explained to her, no, I don't have a passion. I don't give a rat's ass. All that matters is that I sell them. Any internal feeling that you would have about the product is going to be irrelevant in the hailstorm of the competitive market in which you are acting. Oh, I think my stuff is so beautiful, I'm going to charge $2,000. Well, if the market can bear $500, you just don't sell it because you don't get it. The market price is all that matters, not your personal feelings and valuation of it. That plays both ways, too. You might think, well, I kind of suck, and I'm not going to charge as much as someone else does for my stuff. Well, that means you should not be in business because your personal hatred of yourself is irrelevant. If you can sell it at a higher price, do so. If you can't sell it at the high price you think it's worth, have a look at the market and see what the market says it's worth. Value is price, period, in the real world. I wanted to make that clear as we go forward that the markets are objective, and whatever our feelings are, they are irrelevant to the market itself. That's why when you come to your first, when you write your test, I give you little, these essay tests. And I always notice that early on, students try to write things like they start a question, the answer to a question with, I feel, or I believe, or I think, and I take off a point for it. And if they do it on the second test, I take off a couple more points. They act, well, are my feelings important? No, they're not. Not in business. Price is king. Price is value. Always remember that. So, and also remember, don't write in anything in business, I feel or I believe the answer. Don't. God, that bunches my boxers. Now I'm going to introduce you to a little graphic thing. It looks like some people say, well, I don't need this, and others get very dependent upon it. It's actually a quite useful tool in analyzing cash flow. It's called the timeline. When you are being faced with a cash flow at some time in the future, or a cluster of cash flows, always draw yourself a timeline that's going to help clarify for you visually what the layout of the money is in terms of when it happens. So, for example, you can have $200 in 3 years and $400 in 5 years. That's option one. Okay, now, option two, you can have $100 in 1 year and $300 in 2 years. Which is preferable? Now, whenever you face a problem like this, I've left something out that you have to have to answer it. The one thing that is I have missed. Well, let me ask you: is there something missing?
Yes.
What?
It's like a percentage.
Yes, a discount rate. Exactly. Yeah, there will have to be some way that I can turn these future cash flows into now cash flows, so I can lay out option one. And I can oppose that with option two. The goal in both cases is going to be to turn future dollars into now dollars, and then I can compare the two and see which one is higher. Nothing else will matter. Whichever one has the higher present value will be the one we use. Let's say use a discount rate of 6%. Now, you don't sweat compoundings, because I've essentially told you what the compoundings are here by the cash flow pattern. It's yearly, so it's annual. So there's nothing really hard about that. So in option one, I've got 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And I'll do the same here. One, two, three, four. And so in option one, I've got $200 in 3 years and $400 in 4 years. And no, I'm sorry, 5 years. And then option two, I have $100 in a year. And I have $300 in 2 years. These are distinctly different cash flow patterns, but we can turn them into equivalents. And that is everything in finance, is making things that are not the same into the same through the use of present values and future values. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to essentially telescope these two cash flows back to the present. The $200 is going to be $200. The present value is going to be $200 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative third power plus $400 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative fifth. Or you could just divide by 1 plus 0.06 to the third and divide the second one by 1 plus 0.06 to the fifth. I use the negative exponents. It's just how I do it.
Why'd you
Huh? Yeah, yeah. It's occurring 3 years out, so I've got to reel that back in. I have to discount it. And it's almost like, it's sort of like how you would use the word discounting in normal language. It's not worth as much now. I'm kind of discounting it. Okay? And then the second one, we're going to do the present value, which would be 100 bucks times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative first plus $300 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative second power. Now you notice that even though these numbers, 100 and 300, are smaller than the 200 and 400, they're not being knocked down as much by the discounting phenomenon. So if I were to whack these two out, and I strongly recommend that you do this because you're going to do this on the quiz and the test and the homework, so you've got to have this skill set down. Just push them in, and it's just a scientific calculator. Just watch out for parentheses and all that kind of stuff. And so I would say it's going to, and I strongly recommend that you follow with me in case I make a mistake in this. 200 times 1.06 to the negative third power plus 400 times 1.06 to the negative fifth power. So that option one turns out to have a present value of the future expected cash flows of $466.83. Option two, carrying that through, I would have 100 times 1.06 to the negative first plus 300 times 1.06 to the negative second. So the present value of option two is $361.34. Option one wins. Even though the cash flows occur later, longer out there, farther out there, they do have a higher present value. And this is essentially the whole basis of project decision making. You might have several different things that you could do. If they're mutually exclusive, what you look at is which one is going to have the higher present value. Now, interestingly enough, there's something that's being a discussion that is kind of a hot topic right now. And I jumped into it and I almost got my head eaten off. There's an assumption here that is kind of challenging. The one of the 6% discount rate, is that really applicable if you have a cash flow that happens over a longer period of time? Do you see how that option one comes out to have a higher present value? But would there possibly be a reason why I might want to use a higher discount rate on option one because the cash flow is happening farther in the future? Yeah, go ahead. And that would go back to, do you remember which one of those in the risk premium? There was one of them that actually captured that. We called it the maturity premium. And that's exactly what you're talking about there. Now, the reason this is actually relevant is because for the longest time, we've always, people who make a lot of money, finance people, politicians, economists, and intellectuals, always made fun of poor people, because poor people will spend their money now instead of putting it in the bank. Lower income people will buy food and candy and chips instead of investing in stocks and all that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, our Federal Reserve, new Federal Reserve Chairman, Janet Yellen, before she was the president, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, she'd even made a speech where she condescended people and talked about how we've just got to force people to behave rationally. Well, there's an argument coming along now that actually lower income people carry out a calculus called, it's got a kind of a negative name, hyperbolic discounting. They tend to put huge discount rates on anything that happens more than a little bit in the future. So in other words, whereas a quote-unquote rational investor would put 6% on both of those cash flows, you might see a lower income person put some really high discount rate on that cash flow where you get $400 of it in 5 years. They're going to say, they're not going to even consider that. In other words, they're going to put a massive discount rate on something 5 years in the future and not nearly such a high discount rate on something that happens near term. $100, they wouldn't even bat an eye. They'd say, I'll take option two right off the bat. Well, are they being irrational? Maybe not. Maybe they are doing a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation in their head. They don't know they're doing it, of course. No, we don't know we're doing these things. But they're saying, well, hell, $400, that's got to have a discount rate of 50, 80% because it's happened so far in the future. It explains a lot if we're actually seeing this. But in traditional finance, we say, they're both 0.06, don't worry about it. Honestly, even in professional work, you're going to see that. So there you go. Okay, now, here's the next problem I want to give you. Marketing is not just about advertising. Marketing has all kinds of different dimensions to it. Now, there are, I went to this furniture store 2 years ago, and I was looking at some furniture. I was looking at this very nice cabinet, and they had this thing. You can finance 90 days, same as cash. A year, the same as cash. Okay, same deal like that. And he was saying, well, you know, you can take it home now, you sign these papers, and you pay us in a year. And it was about $1,500. It was a gorgeous thing. I wasn't going to buy it, but I wanted to make him feel good about himself for a while. I said, well, I don't borrow money like that. I pay cash. Oh, you pay cash. Well, okay, well, then certainly we can work out something for you right away. He said, if you're paying cash for this, this thing is going to be $1,200. Okay? $1,200. Okay. Let's see what happens here. $1,200. Okay, let's say, well, there are a couple of ways that I could do this. I could play it a sort of a little bit mathy way. I could say, okay, at what discount rate would I have a present value of $1,200 is a future value of $1,500? Well, I'm sorry. Let me do it this way. Present value equals future value times 1 plus k to the negative t power. So in this case, what I would be wondering about is this k. What are they discounting at? And I'd ask myself, we'll see. Okay, so the present value of $1,200 is a future value of 1,500 times 1 plus some k to the negative first power. Now, if you play with the algebra of it a little bit, I can 1 plus k to the first power. I'm going to cross multiply. I'm going to say 1 plus k equals 1,500 over 1,200. So K would be 1,500 divided by 1,200 minus 1. I'm just playing a little algebra here. You don't have to do it this way, by the way. There's something else that you could do instead. But just to humor me for a minute. Humor me. Oops. I'm going to take 1,500 divided by 1,200 minus 1. So I find out, if I solve that, that the K is 25%. In other words, and this is where I'm going with this. In other words, what they're doing is charging you an implicit interest rate of 25%. Do you see that? If they told me that I can pay cash $1,200 now, or I can ride it, they'll ride the bill for me for a year, and I pay $1,500 in a year, what they're telling me is that they're going to finance me for a year on $1,200 at 25% interest. That's what they're telling me. So what do you say? What, should I go with this or not? Oh, hell no. I could borrow the money from a bank for maybe 25%. They used to burn people at the stake for that. And then, interestingly enough, there were some fees involved, too. So here's the upshot of this. Here's the upshot. And I'll show you this one next week when we get to annuities. Annuities are streams of cash flow. You go to these car dealerships. We'll finance you for 1.99%. Find out what they will charge you for the car if you say to them, I'll take care of financing myself. Okay? Don't you even take those papers over to that whole handle you've got over there in that white shirt doing the loans. You leave me alone. He's weird. I will go to my credit union or to my bank and find a loan. I've got it all, and just say, I've got it all taken care of. All I need to know is what the out-the-door price is you want me to bring a check for tomorrow. You will find out that in almost every case where there have been studies done where they've done this as actual field experiments, that they will bring down the price of that car to such an extent that an auto loan at your credit union or your bank is considerably a better deal. Because what they've done is they've padded the price of that car to embed an implicit interest rate on the loan that they're going to make to you. They'll say, yeah, the loan is 1.99% on this higher price. But if you fold that higher price and that percentage rate together, you will find out that you're probably going to end up paying 12, 15% APR on the loan that they set up for you on their 1.99% loans there at the car dealership. And you can certainly do better than that at most banks and credit unions. You do the financing at the car dealership if you are either one, stupid, or two, desperate. Okay? Take that as, and this is just a classic example. Interestingly enough, there's an interesting sidelight to this, too. Some years back, a case went to the Supreme Court. There are these things, and actually, historically, there have always been what are called anti-usury laws, laws that prevent interest rates that are too high from being charged to consumers seeking loans. They've been on the books for ages, and they're still there, although no one enforces them really anymore. But back in the day, anti-usury laws were still pretty much in effect, and they were pretty well enforced. However, what a lot of companies were playing was this game where they would charge an interest rate that was within the limits of law, but then they would hit you with these fees that went along with your loan. And if you take those fees into account in the loans, you find out that the loans have interest rates that are ridiculously higher than what the law allows. Well, a case went to the Supreme Court some years ago about this, maybe 20 years ago or something. Could have been a little longer ago than that. And interestingly enough, the Supreme Court, being populated by people who are absolute dumbasses about finance, said, well, it's not an interest rate because it's not called an interest rate. Those are fees. Fees aren't interest rate. And we kind of try to explain, it doesn't matter what you call it. It is part of the interest rate. And if you take that extra into account, you find out that it is a staggering interest rate that is being charged. To this day, have any of you ever gone to a pawn shop and pawned something? Well, I do it all the time. You find out, well, they charge you an interest rate to keep to lend you money on your asset that you collateral that you give them. But they also charge you a fee. They call it a storage fee or an origination fee or a pawn shop fee. And once you take that into account, what you're doing for a one-month loan on something that you take there when you need the money is just insanely high, ridiculously high. A good example of this, another example that is just now, as a matter of fact, I had a president of a credit union, a CEO of a credit union. He was explaining that credit unions have very few ways that they can actually generate money other than through the loans they make. And they are cash crunched because of this. They are sort of hogtied by their charter. So what they are doing is they are figuring out other ways, creative ways to generate revenue. Creative ways to generate revenue. Okay? So one of their classics that they are pulling now, and banks are doing it too, credit unions are notorious for this little trick, is that they will offer you overdraft protection. Oh, hell, you can get a little over your... We won't send the cops after you. We'll just charge you a nominal fee and a little interest. I overdrafted $12 last month. My fee was $50. So $12 for 1 month, I paid the $12, a 6% interest, and $50. So to borrow $12, I paid about $51, $52. Now, what kind of an interest rate would you imagine that was for a one-month loan? Yeah, that was ass-busting. It's clearly they are just charging insane interest rates. They are just, but that's how they do it. They hide the interest rate in a fee. And you are so grateful that you were able to write a check so you could buy some more ramen noodles. God bless them for letting you eat. That you're not going to bitch about the fact that they just doggy drilled you. Okay? Yeah. So enjoy those ramen noodles. By the way, if you boil them and then put them in a frying pan with two eggs and just heat them up, that is a meal. Damn, that's good. Right, anyway. Sorry, I'm digressing here. But do you see, this is one of the ways that consumers are being screwed these days is because they don't understand that an interest rate is an interest rate. You can call it a giraffe. You can call it My Little Pony. You can call it whatever you want, but it is still an interest rate. And they are using fees to embed interest rates. Keep that in mind. You are better informed than the average bear, and in my class you'll become even more informed and jaded, I hope, to the point where you'll want to, never mind. But the point there being that it is an interest rate, whether you call it an interest rate or not, and you can calculate this interest rate too. You can figure out what this interest rate is. So, bottom line here. Let me show you something. This is going to be a little important to you. This is going to be important a little later. Sometimes what you want to do when you're doing a timeline like this, I'm going to just draw a timeline here. A 6-year timeline. Now, what I'm going to do here, I'm going to show you something. First of all, remember that when you discount, what we call ordinary discounting pulls the value one period back. So in other words, if I put $100 a year, taking a present value would put it 1 year back from there. Okay? You got to keep that in mind because that could, I remember when I was first learning finance, that just drove me crazy, that little concept. Suppose that you were in year four, you were going to get $200. In year five, you were going to get $300. And in year six, you were going to get $400. There will be times when it would be better to collapse those three into one piece and then pull that one piece back to the present. What I mean by that is this. I could take year three as my marker and pull the 200, the 300, and the 400 back to there as a single chunk and then take that chunk back 3 years. It's going to be something that you want to do because otherwise some of these problems can just drive you crazy. Well, what do I do here? But if you can telescope everything back to a single point in the future, then you can pull that one big chunk back as a lump sum. So in other words, what I do is let's say that I have an interest rate of 8% here. Now I want you to do this, please, if you have a calculator. I'm not even going to write it down. I'm just going to take the present values of each of these three components. I'm going to pull $200 back 1 year at 8%. I'm going to pull $200 back 1 year at 8%. Okay. 200 times 1.08 to the negative first. That's $185. And I'm going to write all these down for you, actually. I'm going to write $185 and 19 cents. Now, this is bad business because the rounding can kill you doing this. You can get off. One of the things you'll have to watch out for in those online tests, computers have no mercy. They have no soul. If you're off by a penny, they could actually say you are wrong and send you to hell. So watch out for rounding, for God's sake. Always round at least to six when you're doing this. For me, rounding to two doesn't hurt a damn bit. But when you're dealing with Skynet will send Arnold Schwarzenegger after you and say, hasta la vista, you rounded too much. Okay, but anyway. Okay, now I'm going to do the next one, the 300. 300 times 1.08 to the negative second. And that's 257.20. And then that third chunk was 400, pulled back 3 years, 400 times 1.08 to the negative third. And that's 317.53. So taken all together, and there is going to be a little 185.19 plus 257.20 plus 317.53, 759.92. That is the present value at year three of those three pieces. I've now turned them into a single chunk parked at year three that I can now bring back to the present. I can take this back to year zero as a single thing. 759.92 times 1 plus 0.08 to the 1, 2, 3, to the negative third power. Excuse me. Times 1.08 to the negative third power, 603.25. Now, don't get me wrong. You could do 200 4 years back, 300 5 years back, 400 and 400 6 years back. No question about it. And probably, honest truth be told, for this problem, I probably would have done that. But in a more complicated problem, sometimes it is worth your while to bring a cash flow back to a locked place in the future. This is especially the case for special kinds of cash flows called level annuities, because we have a really special formula. If those are the same amount of money year over year, if you got in year 4, year 5, year 6, year 7, year 8, year 9, the same amount coming in, there's a special formula you can use to get the present value of it. But that present value would be 1 year before the first one occurred. So then you would haul that whole mess back to that year 3 or whatever it was, and then get that lump of money and then pull that back to the present by the simpler formula. But the bottom line here is that there are different ways you can skin a cat. If you were to do 200 times 1.08 to the negative 4th plus 300 times 1.08 to the negative 5th plus 400 times negative 1.08 to the negative 6th, you should get $603.25 as well. Where this plays out much more usefully for you is when you've got these guys all the same. Again, there's a special formula that makes it really fast to calculate it. But what that does, that brings the present value to 1 year before the first of those level cash flows occurred. You do that, and then you can pull it back to the present. Last thing here. If I can remember what it was. Do you play the lottery?
Once in a while.
They had a $1.3 billion jackpot on it. What was that, 2 weeks ago? I bought $20 worth of tickets. I won $4. Anyway. Now, here's the deal. If you were to win, let's say that you, madam, won a lottery and you won $100 million. Did you know that you're not going to get $100 million? Well, how do you know how it works? Well, Illinois, you probably won't pay anyway, though. But anyway, you know how it works, right? They give you an annuity, a level annuity over 20 years of a certain amount of money. Well, if it's, let's say you won $1 million. What they would do is give you $50,000 every year for 20 years. That's how they would pay it. Okay? Now, is that $1 million?
No.
Why? Why not?
I don't know.
Okay. That was honest as hell. Okay. Woman? They say you want $1 million, and they're going to pay you $50,000 a year for 20 years. Is that $1 million? Why not? Come on.
Does it add straight up to a million?
Well, 20 times 50 is $1 million, yeah. Sure it is.
They're taking away the percentage.
What percentage?
For taxes.
No, never mind taxes. You're tax exempt.
I don't know.
It's discounting. $50,000 in a year isn't $50,000 now. $50,000 in 2 years is even less than $50,000. All along the way, those $50,000 payments are worth less and less the farther they are in the future. Each one of those is being discounted back to the present. So there is no $1 million anywhere in this deal except in their corrupted minds and the idiots who would believe them. There is no $1 million. Because they will divide it up into equal payments that add up to a million, but that's not $1 million in present value terms. In other words, what they want you to believe is that if I were to take $50,000 in 1 year, $50,000 in 2 years, $50,000 in 3 years, etc., out year 19, $50,000, and year 20, $50,000. They're telling you that the present value of 20 years of $50,000 each year is the same as $1 million. It just plain ain't. Because you're going to be discounting each of those. And notice that by the time you get out there to year 20, $50,000 is actually a pretty piss poor little bit of money in present value terms. Again, there is no $1 million anywhere in this deal. It is simply, that is pure false marketing to get people to buy it. Because they're essentially, that money, they have that money now, and they're going to use that money, invest that money, earn interest on that money, so they know damn well that that money has a time value, and they're banking on you not knowing that it has a time value. Now understand that they can't, there are two things that you can do. One is, they will offer you a lump sum right away for the instead of taking the annuity. They'll offer you a lump sum right away, and later we'll see, is that really, what interest rate are they discounting at for that lump sum? Okay, that'll be interesting. There's another thing you can do too. There are actually companies that they will give you a lump sum if you will assign them the cash flow of $50,000 a year. What would that come out to be in a lump sum? Maybe $600,000. So there's an interesting thing right there that we can actually pretty much figure out what the discount rate is that's really in play here. But there's also another interesting play factor too that's going on, because it would really depend how you calculated whether it was a deal to take the lump sum or not, based upon where you were in your life. Because if you're early in your life and your earnings are going up, your marginal tax rate bracket is going to be high. If you were to have it happen later, where those cash flows out there were going to be taxed at a lower marginal tax bracket because you're not making hardly any money, it might be smarter for you personally to take the annuity. Might even be smarter for you personally to delay taking the annuity, or to create a trust that took the annuity and then dispersed to you years later. So there are all kinds of tricks you can do, and we'll talk about some of these. But that just gives you an idea of what it means to know what discounting is all about. Because $50,000 every year for 20 years has nothing whatsoever to do with $1 million. There is no $1 million anywhere. That's all I have for you. Go home.